Thanks to everyone for coming out Sunday evening in Spanish Fork, Utah. Thanks to those who download these talks as podcasts from iTunes. We invite your comments, correspondence, and feedback by emails at utahchristians@gmail.com. We also have a website, utahchristians.org. There's a membership class there. We'd like to thank all those that have taken the membership class, become members. We couldn't do what we do without your help and support. Everything is inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the founder, Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Today we'd like to talk to you about specializing in the impossible. In the Bhagavad Gita, as I'm sure in the Bible and other scriptures, there are many promises that God gives. Two such promises in the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana bhava madbhata madhyagi mam namaskaru mam evasyasi satyam te prati jane priyosi me. If you think of me, become my devotee, you offer obeisances to me, and you worship me, you will come to me, this I promise you, without fail. God is saying that we are His children, His parts and parcels. We're not created from matter. We're not temporary. We're eternal spirit souls. If we put Him first place in our mundane, quotidian lives, then in the afterlife, there's a place reserved for us in the spiritual world. As the children of the Almighty Lord, we have the DNA, not of victims, but of victors. We're meant for prosperity, and we're meant to fulfill our dreams. It's our part, then, to be fully confident that God will do what He promised. We have this same service on Saturday nights in Salt Lake City. So I was in a bit of a hurry to get up to Salt Lake City last night. I had promised the devotee in charge there that I would bring him some incense for the gift store, and I forgot. I had also promised myself that I would bring up Diwali posters, of which there's still a stack sitting here, and I forgot. Don't count on my promises. That's the first lesson today. Don't count on my promises. The second lesson is absolutely count on God's promises. He doesn't forget. His determination is ironclad. Imagine if He forgot one day to order the sun to rise. If He forgot one day to order the seasons to change. If He forgot one day to have the planets perfectly ordered in their orbits, traveling at thousands and thousands of miles an hour without colliding with one another. Imagine if there was even the slightest lapse of His consciousness. We can be fully confident that what that God, the one who created millions and millions of universes and maintains them, has promised, He will keep His promise. Now, in our lives, we're surrounded by a negative material world. We're surrounded by matter, which in and of itself is inert, it's dark, it's temporary, contains within it all the seeds of miseries like birth, death, disease, and old age. So our mind may try to talk us out of the wonderful things that God has promised. And in our lives, we look around, we may have relational difficulties, we may have challenges at school, have financial problems. It may not, according to circumstances and appearances, look like there's going to be anything great come out of our present circumstance. All the odds seem to have lined up against us. However, as God-conscious people, it is our job to deep down inside, no matter what the externals, have an unshakable confidence that Krishna is a faithful God and He will do what He says He will do. Don't focus on your impossibilities. Focus on your God. You may be taking a long time in the fulfillment of your dreams. You thought you would have had that promotion long before now. All your friends have gotten married and you're still looking for the boy or girl of your dreams. You don't see how it could work out, but you're not living worried. You're not living frustrated. You're not always trying to figure it out with the parameters and the information that you have available. In all of that, in the uncertainty, there's a peace. There's a rest within you. You know that Krishna, or God, is in complete control. In the Bhagavad Gita, He says, Mata parataram nanyat. Mata is the first person singular. Krishna is speaking to His friend and disciple Arjuna. Mata parataram nanyat. Greater than me, there is nanyat. Nothing. Everything goes according to my will, to my determination. You may not see a way. Do you know that Krishna, or God, has a way? It may look impossible, but you know that Krishna can do the impossible. That's His specialty. In the great epic Mahabharata, Arjuna had made a rash vow that on the following day of hostilities between the righteous Pandavas and the evil-minded Duryodhana, that Arjuna would dispatch Jayadratha, who had killed his own 16-year-old son unfairly in battle. Otherwise, Arjuna said, if I do not bring about the demise of Jayadratha, by the end of the hostilities tomorrow, I myself will enter into fire. Duryodhana's spies brought this news back to Duryodhana. Duryodhana could have leaped for joy. All he had to do was keep Jayadratha away from Arjuna until sunset. That was when all hostilities ceased in those days. And then the great champion of piety and righteousness would enter into fire, and Duryodhana would be able to waltz to victory and envelop the world in darkness. What Duryodhana didn't consider was that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was also present on the planet in the role of the chariot driver of Arjuna. In order to keep Jayadratha safe, Duryodhana lined up his army on the following morning. About 3 million soldiers divided into chariots, elephants, cavalry, and infantry into the form of a needle, 49 miles long, and he put Jayadratha at the very back of the needle. And he thought, there's no way that Arjuna can traverse 49 miles in the course of a single day's fighting and do what he promised to do to Jayadratha. Krishna was driving the chariot, and he either went around to the right or around to the left or over. The fighting went on and on and on and on. It was just a couple of minutes before sunset. They had done beyond what anyone could have possibly imagined, but they were still short. They were still too far away for Arjuna to get a clear shot, to get a bead on Jayadratha. He was too heavily guarded. So what Krishna did, who put the sun in the sky originally, by whose will everything goes on, Krishna caused a false sunset. 2 minutes before the real sunset, Krishna made it appear as if the sun had gone down behind the horizon. So all the guards of Jayadratha thought they'd won the day. They protected Jayadratha. Now Arjuna would enter into the fire. They relaxed their guard. They started doing whatever victory dance they did, high-fiving each other. And Krishna says to Arjuna, now, shoot him. He shot Jayadratha. He fell mortally wounded. Everyone cried, foul, not fair, cheating. And then the sun reappeared as just a small sliver above the horizon, and then the real sun set. It seemed impossible in the natural, but Krishna can do the supernatural. What seemed impossible to man was entirely possible to Krishna. Share with you the history of the Panama Canal. I don't know if you were aware of this, but the French were first people to try this impossible undertaking. They began construction on the canal January 1st, 1880. They worked for 12 arduous years on the project. 22,000 workers perished, and the French gave up in defeat. The United States later bought out the French equipment and excavations, and they began work on the canal May 4th, 1904. The canal was finally opened August 15th, 1914, 1 year ahead of schedule. At the time the canal was opened, the designers estimated that the most traffic the canal could ever support was 80 million tons of cargo per year. In 2008, over 300 million tons of cargo moved through the Panama Canal. Now, those workers who achieved the impossible, they had a theme song, and here's how it goes. Don't send us back to a life that is plain again. We who have shattered a continent's spine. Easy work, oh, we couldn't do that again. Haven't you something that's more in our line? You got any rivers that are not crossable? Got any mountains you can't tunnel through? We specialize in the holy impossible, doing what nobody else could do. How does this relate to us here today? The message is that God has called you not to do little things, but he's called you with his help to do great things. He hasn't called you to a diminishing, receding, shrinking, retreating assignment in life. He's called each and every one of you to be a world changer, a world shaker. He's called you, with him behind your sails, to do the impossible. He's called you to change the world. Krishna's law supersedes the laws of medicine. God's law supersedes the laws of science. It supersedes the laws of finance. It supersedes the laws of nature. The laws are always subordinate to the lawgiver. What we call laws is nothing more or less than the will of the Lord. The law can be suspended for the lawgiver. In the Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter 14th verse, Krishna says, Devi hi esha gunamayi matam maya daratya. This earth, this air, this fire, this water, our minds, our intelligence, our false egos, the ether, these are all the divine energies of God. He's the ordainer, and these are all represent the order which he himself has imposed. So if Krishna says he may prosper me, I don't consider very seriously the opinion of the experts that the economy is down. My bank account may say debt, but Krishna says I will be a lender and not a borrower. The doctors may say, well, I'm sorry, but you're just going to have to live with that sickness. But Krishna wants me prosperous. He wants me vigorous. He wants me healthy. He wants me to have strong, deep, meaningful relationships so that then I can effectively do his work and bring out his will in this world. We've always got something to try to cause us to waver and to doubt what God has said. Your thoughts will tell you, you'll never accomplish your dreams. You're too old. You're too young. You come from the wrong family. You've made too many mistakes in your past. And then you turn on the news. Those voices will tell you how bad the economy is. It'll tell you about drive-by shootings and drug abuse, unemployment being so high. You'll probably lose your job next. You'll just be lucky to hold on to your job for the next 12 months or so. Even well-meaning friends will come up to you and say, you've got what? Isn't that the most dangerous strain of bacteria? I think my grandmother died of the same thing. No, if you're fully confident that you're keeping God first place in your life and that he's always on the throne, no matter what your mind says, no matter what someone tells you, no matter how bad it looks, you know that the Lord would have not put those dreams in your heart without giving you as well the means to accomplish them. If Krishna said it, he will do it. He is the one who spoke millions and millions of universes into existence. He is the one who flung the stars into the sky. He is not limited by the natural. It is described that he lies down as Mahavishnu in a corner of the causal ocean. He exhales, and from his breathing and from the pores of his body, millions and millions of universes emanate, originally like little golden eggs. And we all have doubts. We all have moments of uncertainty. But don't allow those seeds of unbelief and faithlessness to take root. Always come back to that place of faith. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says, yato yato nischalati manas kanchalam ashtiram. The nature of the mind is that it is flickering. It'll wander here and there. It'll be fickle. When we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari, it brings the wandering mind back to meditation on God. And no sooner have you brought the wandering mind back by chanting one mantra, the mind begins to go off again in its own capricious way. Then you say again, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. It's not that those of us who are aspiring to be pious and righteous and God conscious, not that we don't have a problem with the mind. It's not that our minds won't wander, but we have a God-given effective means of always bringing it back and bringing it back, bringing it back and bringing it back. And if you practice over the course of time, the mind will repattern its behavior. It'll wander less often. And eventually, when your meditation has perfected itself, the mind will stay fixed constantly, uninterruptedly, 24/7 on the lotus feet of the Lord, just like a lamp never wavers in a windless place. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. I believe that all things are possible. Don't consider your circumstances. Develop the habit of considering your God. Not just going to consider what my mind is telling me. Not just going to consider the doom and gloom predictions from the experts on CNN. I'm not going to consider just how big my problem is, but I'm going to consider how big my God is. I'm going to consider that His laws, His will, supersedes natural laws. I heard about a very popular minister, and he usually left his home in Texas about a half an hour before the services began. That would always give him plenty of time to get there. But one Sunday, there was an accident on the road, and the traffic was jammed up. The minutes were ticking by. He's looking at his watch, and he began to think, it is impossible because of these current circumstances that I'm going to make the services in time. He called ahead on his cell phone. He told people to make contingency plans. They said, let's see what we can do. About 3 minutes later, they heard a siren coming their way. Policeman spun around, did a U-turn, said, follow me. Went right out onto the curb where it's totally illegal, began to accelerate, and behind him, the preacher and his cars accelerated at 90 miles an hour. They're flying past everyone else who's not moving. And people are thinking, who the heck is he that he can go 90 miles an hour in an illegal lane? The point was, he wasn't breaking the law because the law was right in front of him. Even that policeman, he's going 90 miles an hour past the other policemen who are around the accident. And instead of stopping him, they're all giving him a salute and wishing him well. The reason that he could break the law like that was because the law was riding with him. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharman parityagya mam ekam saranam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshesu mam ichaha. Make this the presiding law in your life. Make this the law that trumps. This the law that eclipses every other law. To love the God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might, and to serve Him uninterruptedly and without any motivation. Make that the presiding law. And if you do that, no matter what you give up or what mundane laws you might have to occasionally transgress in order to pursue that goal of putting God first place, Krishna personally promises, don't worry, I will protect you. When he was on the planet 5,000 years ago exhibiting his childhood pastimes, he was just, at that time, a little toddler, barely able to walk. And there was an old lady who sold fruits out in front of Nanda Maharaj's home there. Krishna, as a little baby, he'd seen adults go and exchange stuff and get fruits and goods for that. And he wanted a mango or two. So he toddled out there on unsteady legs. He just managed to grab a few grains of rice from inside the house. In his inimitable infantile way, he offered the elderly lady a few grains of rice for some fruits. Probably those fruits that she had in her basket were her only assets. And if she didn't bring back the income from the fruits, maybe her many children would go hungry on that evening. So she shouldn't have given him any fruits if she was calculating from a self-centered point of view. But she saw that this child is not ordinary. This child is divine. This child is all attractive. She couldn't resist not only giving him one or two fruits, but she gave him all the fruits in her basket. In the back of her mind, she might have been thinking, this is not a good thing. We're not going to eat tonight. But she put it aside in order to please the Supreme Personality of God. And little Krishna, you see this, I don't know if you can see this, he's got all the fruits. His tiny little arms, taking them back inside the house. And she thought, well, we're not going to eat tonight, but some or other, it was worth it. And then she looked back to what she thought would be an empty basket of fruits and saw instead, not emptiness, but rubies, sapphires, diamonds. The entire basket was replete with valuable jewels. Krishna says, give up all varieties of religion, give up all varieties of duties in favor of following and serving me. Don't worry about what you lose, because I will protect you personally. That is my promise to you. When we consider Krishna and his unlimited power, our future is bright, Our best days, we know, are still ahead of us. Our greatest victories are not behind us. They're still out in front. My question to you today is, are you considering your circumstances or are you considering your God? Krishna says to you, I'm everything you need. If you're sick, I'm a doctor. If you're struggling, I'm your provider. If you're worried, I'm your peace. If you're lonely, I'm your friend. If you're in trouble, I'm your deliverer. If you need a break, I'm your favor. If you consider God and not your circumstances, then God will show up in your life and do amazing things. The Almighty Lord is offering each and every one of you a partnership. He's reminding us today that he uses people like us, ordinary people with extraordinary faith, to show his unlimited power, and he makes his resources available to us to bring change. In the Lord's Prayer, it says, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. What's the difference between earth and heaven? In heaven, everybody is fully confident in the protection of Krishna. They're fully 100% Krishna conscious. In earth, the difference is that we prefer to do it on our own. We prefer to do it our way, to make our choices, to have our independence. And when we get in trouble because of our bad choices or limited knowledge, then we want to call God in to put out the fire that we started in the first place. More and more of us put God first place, be less self-centered and more God-centered, then we can literally usher in the spiritual world right here and now. Many years ago, a great evangelist preacher who had a radio show on NBC, Dr. Meyer, passed away, and an hour of nationwide broadcast time became available on that syndicate. Now, there was a young revivalist preacher on the West Coast just starting to get some traction, some momentum. He had had a revivalist meeting with 15,000 people in Los Angeles, and he had another one scheduled in Portland, Oregon. Just at that time, it was proposed to him by two businessmen, Howard Butt and Bill Mead, that he take up that hour time. And Billy Graham said, well, I've got my plate full. I don't know if I can handle even half of what's before me. What will it cost? Howard and Bill said, we talked to the NBC executives. It'll cost $25,000 for the first 13 weeks. Billy Graham said, that's impossible. We haven't got money like that, not even close. But if God sends us, without our asking for it, if God sends us $25,000 and not a penny less, then we will sign the contract for the 13 weeks of broadcast. That night he was in Portland. There were 17,000 people in attendance. He was talking about what seems impossible for men is possible for God. He made a joke. He shared about the need for $25,000 for the 13 weeks and just said, we'll see. And the audience giggled along with him. The interesting thing was that after the altar call, without having been bidden or harangued in any way, shape, or form, of their own volition, people started coming up and putting in change, quarters, nickels, dollars into the offering plate. After the service was over, everybody was amazed. They got together. They counted up. It was $24,000. So this presented a problem because they said it has to be $25,000. And they actually even thought maybe the devil has given 24, so it would be so close, and he uses this to mislead us. So anyway, they were tired from counting. They went out to have a bite. They came back. They saw two envelopes that they'd overlooked before on another desk. They were from Howard Butt and Bill Mead, each one for $500. That was a weekday night. They were so excited. They took the train to Los Angeles. They went to the NBC studios. We have got the money for the 13 weeks of national broadcast time. The secretary in the office said, well, NBC has changed its mind. They're no longer going to rent out the time for religious programming. Howard and Bill said, but you promised. We're not going to let you go back on your word. We're going to sit here until you change your mind. And said, well, you're going to be sitting a long time because it's Friday night, and the executives are not going to be in the office till Monday morning. He said, where are they? They're out playing golf. You get to them, we're not leaving. They sent someone out right on the golf course on the 8th tee. The NBC executives had a meeting, and they decided to reverse their policy and rent the time
to Billy Graham. That hour of radio broadcast was called the Hour of Decision. It eventually ended up on 800 radio stations nationwide. It changed millions of lives. It was the impossible that God made possible. We may have 1,000 reasons to not stretch ourselves, to not pursue our dreams, to settle into mediocrity. We may say to ourselves, our dreams are too high, the obstacles are too big, my health is too bad. Let's not make excuses. We should be in the mood, bring it on. God has promised it. I believe that He will fulfill His promise. Let it happen. If God says it, I will believe it. Instead of reasoning it out, like, how is this ever in the world going to happen? To have faith that the Lord will breathe in your direction. Get out of this natural way of thinking, this limited way of thinking, and start thinking, I know this may be impossible for men, but with God, all things are possible. Our concluding question tonight to you is, are you focusing on your circumstances or are you focusing on your God? Are you fully confident in the pursuit of your dreams or have you talked yourself out of it? Krishna wants to take each and every one of you places from here that you wouldn't believe. He hasn't even started with you yet. You may have a beautiful wife, beautiful kids, beautiful house, and we should be grateful for all the bounties that He's given us, but at the same time, we should realize that you ain't seen nothing yet. He's brought us this far, and He intends to take us further than we could possibly ever imagine. What Krishna has put in your heart may sometimes seem too big, it may seem too unlikely, but do yourself a favor and don't talk yourself out of it. Don't run all your calculations and tell Krishna why it's not going to work out. No, my prayer is that you'll become fully confident. Not 25% confident or 50% or 75%, but 150% confident that Krishna will do everything that He's promised in the Bhagavad Gita and in your life. If you'll put this principle into action, don't consider your circumstances, consider your God. You'll end up being able to say, the power of the Most High has been with me. He's brought promises to pass that looked impossible. He's enabled me to accomplish dreams far greater than I could ever imagine. He's hurdled me over obstacles that looked insurmountable. You'll be able to say that Krishna or God has been good to me. He's shown up and shown out in amazing ways in this life and in the next life He's promised me, that I will go back home, back to Godhead.